Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Your host, Greg, will have smart discussions with friends, experts, and thought leaders on customer experience, transformation, and leadership. Please follow this podcast on your preferred platform. I am sure you will enjoy the next episode with the guest I selected for you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CX Goalkeeper podcast. Today with Jonathan Stas. Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
Hey, thanks, Greg. Very well, thanks.
Thank you very much. And today it's about a book, a new book that popped up to my, and it's really interesting. It's about Daily Practices of Inclusive Leaders, a guide to building a culture of belonging. And for the people watching the video, you see that also behind Jonathan. But before we deep dive into this discussion, as usual, I would like to learn more about you, Jonathan. And therefore, could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, my name is Jonathan Stutz, and I'm the author of Daily Practices of Inclusive Leaders. I've been doing this work for 25 plus years. I was born in Toronto, Canada, which is considered one of the most diverse cities in the world. And at a very young age, we moved to Atlanta, Georgia in the U.S., in the height of the civil rights movement. So that was a very, you know, big change for me as a young person. I saw discrimination, racism, anti-Semitism, bigotry, and it just came about kind of through experiences I had. I played American football as a kid, and in driving to practices with my friends' parents, I would hear, you know, pretty negative language about Black people. And then on the playground as a kid, I'm Jewish, and I was treated poorly for, just anti-Semitism, I guess, you know, Jewish hate that came out of the playground from kids, and they're hearing it from their parents. So that just didn't sit right with me because I came from a very progressive family, very positive family. Was really going to, you know, talk a little bit about family values, but I was raised in a family that appreciated people of all different backgrounds and experiences. And then I moved, my parents divorced, and my family moved to Seattle, Washington, where my mom was from. And I spent more of my formative years here in the Seattle area. But that always stood with me, that experience that I had. It was like a pilot light burning. And I studied political science at the University of Washington, and that was an interest in leaders and leadership. I later did a master's in organizational leadership, so I've always been fascinated with leaders and leadership. And it was through my work in sales, actually, as I began my career, that I became aware of the need that companies were having where I live to help increase the representation of people from different backgrounds and cultures. So it was through that I found my passion, and I got some publicity through an organization I started called the East Side Diversity Task Force. And that was bringing companies together from the east side of Seattle with community-based organizations on the Seattle side that had greater diversity of folks. And that was very successful. Had my picture in the Diversity Business News with a famous American, Jesse Jackson, and in the civil rights movement. He was with Dr. King back in the day. So he was very well known. And Microsoft Corporation saw that and recruited me in to do diversity outreach work. And that really was where I found my passion. It tied back to those childhood experiences and my passion around social equity and social justice, and treating people with respect and dignity, and getting to know people, you know, for who they are and not some stereotype. So that really was formative for me. And then from Microsoft, I went on to Zulily, which was a flash sale retailer, and then spent about 5 years at Amazon leading diversity for 5 different global organizations working globally. I always had a strong interest in global international work, multiculturalism, and led, I think it was up towards around 40, 50,000 people doing diversity work for their leadership teams in those organizations. So that's a little bit about me, Greg.
Thank you very much for this introduction and also sharing the difficulties that you faced throughout your career and throughout your personal life. And therefore, I am really interested to learn more about you and in particular, which values drive you in life.
Yeah, I think the values that drive my life is first family, the value of connection to people that really are important and matter to you in your life. And through my family's values of what I was taught, being progressive and open to people of different backgrounds and cultures, experiences, I think that came from, you know, living in Toronto and having people from different backgrounds and cultures in my home, welcoming people, being curious, learning. It was definitely a lifelong learning culture I grew up in, being non-judgmental. And it ties back to my education, you know, being Jewish and the value, there's a Jewish value called tikkun olam, which translates loosely to repair the world. And the idea is that you're brought into this world and it's somewhat broken, sometimes more broken than other times. It seems pretty broken right now. And to that our role in this life is to repair the world, to help make the world a better place than when you came into it. So pretty much once I, you know, found my passion and my purpose around social justice, social equity, that really became tied to where I felt like I could make a difference in the world to help people that have been historically underestimated, you know, oppressed or marginalized in some manner. So that really ties to my core values.
Thank you very much. And if I think about this great introduction and the start of this discussion, we know now today's top player, it's Jonathan Statz. And now we are going to start the game. We are discussing about the book, Daily Practices of Inclusive Leaders, A Guide to Building a Culture of Belonging. And also already now, before kick off this discussion, please, dear audience, pause this podcast, go to Amazon or to your preferred bookstore and buy the book and ever read it because it's really worth it. Now we are going only to touch few topics that you can get a feeling about this book, but it's really important that you read this book because this is really something extremely important nowadays, as Jonathan already said. How can we ensure that our internal in the company's inclusion, diversity, and equity strategy prioritized inclusion as the foundation element of both driving diversity and equity in our organization?
Yeah, thanks for that. That's a great question. And I think it's a multi, you know, kind of choice answer in a way. I think the first thing is the organization itself, their values to be written and to be explicit what their values are, and then reward and recognize those inclusive behaviors, make inclusion and diversity part of the hiring process, part of talent management, and part of the promotion process, that we're looking for these traits, we're looking for these behaviors, and that it's a value that the company not only looks for when hiring, but also rewards and recognizes that those behaviors. So we create this culture of belonging just in the foundational values of the organization. And then I think in recruiting employees and hiring people, you know, we've put a lot of emphasis on technical skills or what they call hard skills. But I think we need to, you know, kind of move the other way, the continuum over a little bit, and to focus on the soft skills, check people's values, their cultural competency, their emotional intelligence, interpersonal skills, you know, looking for servant leaders, people that kind of flip the pyramid upside down and see their role as actually serving the people that they work with. You know, and tied closely to, you know, the customer experience. If you create a culture of belonging where employees feel that they really do belong and they fit in, they're going to have, and they're treated, you know, with those behaviors of inclusivity, they are going to give more. They're going to be more loyal, more committed. They're going to take, you know, what's called, there's been written about this founder's mentality. They're going to take ownership. So when they're working with customers, they're going to be more committed to finding those answers, to solving those problems, to helping them with their issues, because they take it very personally. They see themselves as deeply connected to the mission and purpose of the organization. So, you know, and then the other things we can do is like leadership development and training, doing inclusive leadership training. You know, I always say that inclusive leadership is leadership, and teaching people these inclusive behaviors, because if leaders and peer leaders, employees, you don't even have to be a people manager, if you are exhibiting these behaviors, you have empathy. It begins really with empathy for your people. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but empathy leads to inclusion, and inclusion will lead to the employees feeling that they belong. So belonging is something you feel, and inclusion is something that it's a behavior that you exhibit through how you treat people. And then broadly, you can help your employees with, you know, allyship training, cultural competency training. I think cultural competency, especially as we're dealing in a global environment, folks need to become more culturally competent. They need to spend time learning about different cultures and backgrounds, because we have a workforce that is global. We're working with people all over the world, as you and I are today, me in Seattle and you in Switzerland. You know, it's a global workforce and it's a global world. So folks need to become more culturally competent. And then just growing awareness and education. And then three quick ones: executive sponsorship. You got to be vocally active and showing up for diversity and diversity-related events. listen, be curious. I call it lead with your ears in the book. You learn and listen and connect with people and then share what you've learned, encourage others to get involved. And then to, you know, last couple, just funding for budget and resources, provide budget and resources, people, funding an IND, you know, an inclusion, diversity, and equity leader in the department, and fund employee resource groups so the company's really walking the talk and supporting it. And last, measurement, you know, data, reporting to leadership, that data dashboard to CEOs, to VPs, to all people managers, and be transparent, be, you know, vulnerable about where the organization is today and where you aspire to be on everything that you can measure and even the intersectionalities of that. So depending how you're collecting employee demographics, to measure those and then look at those intersectionalities. And just for your listeners who aren't familiar, like, you might be able to measure on, let's say, race and gender, but then, so you have, you know, women and you have men, you have Black, you know, you have white, you have Hispanic. You may want to look at the data, or you should look at the data as like Black women, because Black women are going to have a very different experience, for example, than Black men, if you're able to track on race in your country. So that gives you a pretty thorough answer there, you know, that hopefully your listeners will appreciate the depth that, you know, hopefully I've shared with you.
Yes, and I think it's really important to explain all these topics. We cannot go through them today. However, you mentioned something that for me, and I think for us, it's really important, is the feeling of belonging. And this is not something that we can do once a month or once a week in our team meetings or in our all-hands meeting if you have bigger teams with hundreds of people. And I know that in the book you are sharing, what daily practices from the book or from your past experience can we adopt to help our team consistently weave this inclusion in the everyday interactions and also in the decision-making process?
Right. Well, the first one I think that is, you know, pretty easy for people to implement, and that's the whole idea. These are easy, intentional actions that people can take. Oftentimes people think this work is adding two or three big things to people's already busy plates. But it's really just doing a couple little things, you know, in the week that sends these messages that you know, people appreciate what you're about as a leader. So I was listening to one of your podcasts from a while back. I think it was Michael Brandt. I believe that's correct. Yes. And he referenced something that in the US, and I don't know if it's global, but it's good, the golden rule. Are you familiar with this?
Yes.
Is, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated. And what we've done in our book is we've raised the bar on that. We call it the platinum rule. And we say, treat people the way they want to be treated. And what that requires is for you to get to know people at a deeper level. So this is what part of one of the seven insights of inclusive leadership is the platinum rule that we talk about in our wisdom, daily wisdom chapter. And one of the daily practices tied to that is what we call inclusive one-to-one meetings. So the one-on-one meeting is, I believe, taken for granted. It's a massive opportunity to connect with your people at a deeper level and find out how they do want to be treated. So using your one-on-one with employees to take the time to get to know them at a deeper level of what are their personal goals and aspirations? How are you doing? Being vulnerable and ask for feedback on how you're, just like you would ask a customer for how they're feeling about the service they're receiving. You want to ask your employees to tell you how you're doing for them, right? And create that safe environment so people can speak up. And this is part of creating what we call the speak up culture. And we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. But this idea of encouraging your folks to be open and candid and transparent, because this feeds into all aspects of the business and solving customer issues. If you can have your employees really feel safe, psychologically safe, to speak up and share their opinions, ideas, and perspectives. And I believe it starts with that one-to-one meeting and that connection that employees have with their manager, with each other, and then ultimately the company benefits because they can create that same kind of safety for customers to be able to share openly with their employees that are servicing them.
You mentioned this speak up culture, and I can remember also from sports, you see my background, soccer, a few years ago, but if I say a few years ago, it's 10, 15 years ago, there was one advertising also from Nike, speak up, stand up. And I think this is something linked to what you're going to share. And therefore, I wanted to mention that because it stand out and we are still speaking about this advertising from Nike. How do we create and sustain a speak up culture within companies that empowers all employees to address micro inequalities and ensure accountability at all levels?
Yeah, I think it begins with leadership to model what we call a speak up culture and to talk about it and encourage and support people to share their ideas and perspectives. You know, as I've been listening to your podcast, there's a lot of discussion about artificial intelligence. You know, this is one of the most challenging, complex, difficult problems and technologies that we've seen. And it's going to require all hands on deck. It's what we call adaptive learning problems. No one person has the answer. And it's kind of like moving all the time. So you have to adapt and learn and adjust. And so we need a workforce that feels comfortable sharing their concerns, ideas, create creative outlet to brainstorm without feeling that they're going to be ridiculed or criticized, and just really, you know, kind of support that debate and create a culture. And it starts with leadership. And then I think it comes back to what I said a minute ago. It's like connect with your people at that deeper level to invest that time and create this I've got your back, you've got my back culture, creating that psychological safety for your employees and reward employees who model allyship to back up each other. You know, women get, it's been shown in studies that women get interrupted in meetings much more frequently than men. So the role that folks can play in meetings is when they see somebody getting interrupted, they actually, this is one of our daily practices, we call it creating a culture where you use this idea of the pause button. And you literally say, hold on, I'm going to hit the pause button. And you make this something that everybody knows that when you say, I'm hitting the pause button, we're going to slow down, we're going to think more critically, a little more introspective about what just happened and talk about it. So it can be even when somebody gets interrupted, you say, hey, I'm going to hit the pause button, you know, Julia was not finished speaking yet. Let's let her finish and then we'll come back to you. We want to hear your idea too, but we really want to recognize and shine a light on her and let her finish what she was saying. Same thing when ideas are shared. Oftentimes someone will share an idea. 10 minutes later, somebody else will say almost the same thing and they'll get all the recognition for it. So it's really good to be what we call an action ally, or often called an accomplice or advocate, to speak up and say, hey, hold on a second. That's a great idea, but I think it's what Julia said just a few minutes ago. Why don't you two get together and work on that idea together? Because it sounds like you're kind of thinking in the same track. Not to throw the other person under the bus for stealing the idea, because it may have been just unconscious, right? So anyway, those are some things. Using the pause button and then judging, you know, when to use that and whether it's done privately or in the meeting when you can role model that behavior.
Thank you. But to the audience, if you're pausing the podcast, please come back after buying the book. It's not leaving the podcast. Now, joke aside, I think it's really an important topic. And perhaps also to understand a bit better. I think a lot of companies are speaking about these problems a lot, but they're not really taking real step to address that internally. What steps can companies take to address these misconceptions and ensure that there is a full engagement, that there's real support across the teams?
Yeah, I mean, there's some misconceptions that inclusion, diversity, and equity, you know, doesn't include, you know, white men, for example. You know, that's one concern of these misconceptions. It absolutely includes white men and everyone else. In fact, we can't successfully implement inclusion, diversity, and equity initiatives without white men. This is a business issue. It's a business strategy. Going back to, as I was saying earlier, we need everyone involved, and that includes white men. It isn't about, it's not a zero-sum game. Everyone wins when we do this right. DEI, or I include what we call inclusion, diversity, and equity, is about building the highest performing teams. And Greg's studies going all the way back to the 50s show that diverse teams outperform homogeneous teams. If you're part of a diverse team, you win by benefiting from, you know, increased output, creativity, and ultimately innovation. And if you're the leader of a diverse team, you win by getting recognized by your team's success. If you're a member of a diverse team, you benefit from learning from the experiences, perspectives, ideas of people different from yourself. And the other thing that's really interesting that studies are showing that working with people different from yourself actually changes how each of us work. The research reveals that if you're likely to work harder to process information, you'll share unique information more openly, you'll generate more nuanced and complex thinking. It's super interesting. And adding a diversity to our teams motivates each of us, including white men, to be more creative and thoughtful. So we're actually showing up differently when there's a diversity of people on our teams. So the business case for diversity is substantial. So it really does, you know, lift all boats. Everybody benefits.
Thank you. And you mentioned that at the beginning, and I would like to come back. You spoke about recruiting, retention, culture, and so on. How can we better integrate this principle into every phase of our employee life cycle, recruiting, retention, and enhance our internal culture and business outcomes?
Yeah, there's a host of ideas in the book, and even on our website, you'll see inclusivepebbles.com is our website. But two I'll give you right off the bat. Many people have heard of SMART goals. These are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound. So we call them SMARTY goals. And we've added the I and the E, which is inclusion, inclusive goals, and equitable. So they become inclusive and equitable goals. And what we say is when you're setting goals, to put it through the lens of ensuring that they're inclusive and they're equitable. Equitable, like, are they fair? Is each person getting what they need to be successful through this goal or through this work that you're doing, whether it's a new policy, a new practice, a promotion policy, compensation policy, hiring policy, I mean, just all through the employee life cycle. So, and the book is organized by the employee life cycle. You can literally go, and that's why we call it a guide. You can literally go to the tab and, you know, on recruiting or, you know, or we call attract or develop, keep, engage, and see the practices there. The second one I would say, besides the SMARTY goals, is be intentional. As I mentioned earlier, doing this work isn't two or three big things. It's doing small, intentional actions daily, even, like I said, 2 to 3 times a week. And we call it dropping pebbles. So the idea is that these practices are like dropping a pebble, and somebody sees you dropping that pebble, and then they want to model that behavior too. They say, oh, that's that interrupting, not interrupting people. That's part of our culture. So when they see somebody getting interrupted, they go into the next meeting, and they will speak up. And so these pebbles being dropped create ripples and encourages others to drop pebbles, and that creates ripples, and they build to waves. And over time, this is what shifts the culture. And that's why we say it's not like big things. It's lots of little things that are done to help people understand that this is how we operate here. And, you know, as I mentioned, the leaders exhibit these inclusive behaviors, and inclusive leadership translates to employees feeling they belong. So it's really, you know, really all about being intentional and purposeful and thinking about how do we create this culture where everybody feels they can speak up, they fit in, that they belong here, that they're valued. What I call it, everybody feels they're seen, heard, valued, and supported. So that's a basic human need that we all have, no matter, you know, what your background or experience or race or gender or ability, sexual orientation. We all want to feel seen, heard, valued, and understood.
Jonathan, thank you very much for speaking and discussing about this topic and for introducing us to your book, this really interesting topic. Now we are coming to an end of this discussion, of this game, and in the extra time in the last 3 minutes, I still have 3 questions for you. Fast forward, in 10 years from now, we are back on the CX Goalkeeper podcast. What are we discussing about?
Yeah, I think this, you know, AI has so become so dominant, and because it's revolutionary. And so I think one would be how AI has affected the customer experience for good and for bad. I think we'll be talking about best AI CX practices and sharing nightmare AI CX stories. And then just how AI has changed CX and CS, you know, how has maybe replaced the customer service department or those employees, or the impact it's having on the, you know, like as you talk about, like it's a human to human experience. So how are we maintaining that human experience, that human to human contact with the advance of AI? So I think that's going to be really key. And then of course, functionally, how does AI think about cultural competency? How do we train it to deal with different cultural differences? Customer service is going to be different in different parts of the world, right?
Hoping that it's not as biased as a lot of people nowadays, but this is another discussion. What's the best way to contact you, and what's the best way to find the book?
Yeah, great. So the contact details, of course, LinkedIn is great. Jonathan Stutz, you'll find me on LinkedIn. And of course, my website for my business is globaldiversitypartners.net, as one word, globaldiversitypartners.net. And then we also have a book website, as I mentioned earlier, inclusivepebbles.com, where there's videos and lots of resources and all that. So that's a great way to reach me. And to buy the book, as you mentioned at the top of the show, Amazon is great. You can request it through Amazon, or purchase through Amazon, or your favorite bookseller. That's a great way to purchase the book as well. And again, Daily Practices of Inclusive Leaders, and the book website, inclusivepebbles.com.
And you are not the only one author. Perhaps you can share also the contact details of the details of Eddie.
Yeah, sorry, I missed that.
If you want, you can also share the contact details of Eddie, or what we can do is we can
put them. Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so if you go to inclusivepebbles.com, my co-author, Eddie, has we have an author page, and so you can read his bio as well and his website, and he has his own business website as well.
Thank you very much. And now the last question is Jonathan's golden nugget. It's something that we discussed or something new to leave to the audience.
Yeah, I think I want to just emphasize the point that this inclusive leadership is leadership, and the tie-in that if you can create a culture of belonging for your employees, that's going to directly translate to a greater level of commitment and loyalty to the customer. And so taking care of your people and they will take care of you ties directly to the customer's experience if the employees feel that they belong and you've created this culture of belonging in the organization.
Thank you very much, Jonathan, for being on the show and for writing the book. Please stay with me, to the audience. For today, it's everything. I hope that you enjoyed this discussion as much as I did. You will find all this information and the link to buy the book in the show notes. Please have a look at the book. It's worth it. Thank you very much and bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share the word of mouth. Subscribe it. Share it. Until the next episode, please don't forget, we are not in a B2B or B2C business. We are in a human-to-human environment. Thank you.